By way of illustration in a few minutes, for those that know music, you might know what it is. So my title today is there life in the law? Is there life in the law? The law typically has a negative element that comes with it right away. It's just packed into the word. Restrictive, tight, legalistic, no life. So is there life in the law? And the subtitle would be monochrome music. So a black and white printer prints in monochrome. Is there monochrome music? How does that work? What is monochrome music? Is there life in the law? It's similar themes here. So as far as my testimony, when I was a young person, I remember waking up to spiritual things at about 17, 19-ish, 20. I did, we had the Gideon's Bible people come through school. I was probably 8. I had a heart that wanted to please God. I wrote my name in the back. I, Jason Hofer, do hereby give my life to God. I wrote it in there and I meant it at an 8-year-old level. I didn't know anyone else that did it. I later on found out some more of my friends did on their own privately, but it wasn't something we talked about as young people. And I remember flipping through the Bible, the red Bible, in times of peace, go to this, and I would go to page number, completely Bible illiterate, but I would look up the passages. When you're confused, go here, when, and so on. So I had spiritual interest, but I had a lot of sin. But I remember waking up to spiritual realities. What would Christianity look like? Is there actually a God? Going through some of high school with the teachings we had, it was obviously a lot of evolution mixed in, and absorbing that as a Hutterite. So as a Hutterite, we're taught that God made the world, but you have these millions of years textbooks that I was absorbing at the same time. And in my mind, it was maybe both. I didn't really think about it, but after a while, I did start thinking about it. How can this be? And I did a lot of field work, a lot of trucking. I generally had earbuds in when I would wash the barns, so I listened to a lot of stuff. And with that came mainly, I almost grew up on Focus on the Family. I listened almost every day for many, many years. Chuck Swindoll, Charles Stanley, John MacArthur, with that comes certain teaching. And it was not the teaching of my background. And for a long, long time, it didn't occur to me that there was serious conflict with what they were saying and what I was being taught. There were very different things that were coming to me. And for a while, I just took them and absorbed. And like a 10-year-old, you read the evolution stuff, and okay, they probably know what they're talking about. And hopefully the preacher knows what he's talking about, but you don't really get or absorb that it's so conflicting. And with that came the charity influence, which was completely different again from my Hutterite Focus on the Family evangelical feed. And all of that kind of merged into one stream. And at a certain point, I remember thinking, I need to figure this out. What do I want? What is viable long-term? So when I woke up spiritually, it's like waking up in the morning and, okay, now we're ready to face the day. There's a certain point in my spiritual life that happened. I stopped just absorbing and just assuming it was okay. And I started thinking deeply about what is credible, what is the most credible, what makes the most sense. I'm a very sensible person. I need things to be ordered. I don't do artificial well. It needs to fit. It needs to be rational, coherent. It needs to make sense here and there. I need that to be that way. I need Christianity to be that way. I need my life to be that way. I don't do pretend well. So as a young person with that personality, I thought about it. What is credible? What is good long-term in the future? Long-term, eternal, short-term, here. For marriage, for what do I want out of life? Which version of Christianity can I commit to? That was the biggest question. Because if these people believe it, so be it, they're doing well. These people believe that, they're doing well. But this is my life. What do I do? Where do I go? What could I and what should I commit to? And those are different things. What could I and what should I commit to? what will I walk in? Will it be current? Like, is it an ancient thing that I just kind of bring over here and pretend it's good and you kind of ignore the obvious flaws in it? Or how does that look? Is it viable? Is it sensible in the long term and the short term? And questions like, is what we believe and how we live, how we choose to live, does it make sense in the big picture? And maybe you younger people here, younger as in anybody younger than me, does what we believe, the question for you, do you feel what we believe and how we live, how we choose to live, does it make sense in the big picture? Like, you're absorbing a lot of different things, got a lot of different feeds, especially with the social world out there. There's a lot more information, a lot more sifting that we need to do. And so we, as the older people, we made some distinct choices. We would love to be able to give the most valuable thing we have to those coming behind us. And whether that's age 5, 15, or 25, or 35, I don't know what level people process things, but I'm not talking to a specific person or age group. I'm simply talking anybody following. So we'd love to for you to be able over time to pick up, understand what we believe, and realize and understand that it makes sense, though not popular, though it's narrow, though it's a slice of society. We would like you to understand and feel that it's the best and safest way to live. That would be my heart's desire, that we have thought about it, we have processed it. Sometimes people think, on a side note, people think the Amish are just dumb and they're not thinkers, and that's why they do what they do. They're just too ignorant to be in society. If you've talked to Amish, you'll find out very quickly that is not the case. The Amish that I've talked to were serious thinkers, serious, deep thinkers, and they chose to do what they do because they chose to do what they do, and they want to do what they do. They're not dumb backwoods people. They're philosophers, some of them. They think about what they do, and they do it on purpose. I found it unusual that the men that I have talked to from that background, and some of them have left it, but the way and how they were able to think about things was astounding for me. I completely underestimated them. So as you look at, maybe as you younger people look at your parents, I want you to understand that we're not here just because we don't know anything else. We're just simply here, and we're just going down this train track and this tunnel vision. It isn't the case. We've deeply thought about life. We've looked at this and looked at that and come to the conclusion of this is the way we need to, should, and are blessed to be able to walk in. So when we pray, thy kingdom come, thy will be done, as we often do, what does that translate to? What does that look like? And then in light of some of the influences I mentioned before in my life, there was a certain expectation or non-expectation that some of those teachers, it wasn't necessarily expected that your life may look like thy kingdom come, thy will be done. As in what Jesus taught and did, and Matthew, Sermon on the Mount, it wasn't really for our time. So the kingdom of God in their theology actually did not need to come. That would be later, maybe 1,000 years later, when God's kingdom would come. They thought that's what Jesus referred to. So Sermon on the Mount, we can actually take that whole thing and put it over here on the shelf and just leave it because it's not relevant. So when Jesus said, thy kingdom come, it wasn't for me, according to their teaching. And is that credible? Is that sensible? Is that wise? But when he did say, thy kingdom come, thy will be done, what would, in this world, what would that actually look like? Is it even meant to be a tangible, visible thing? Or is it meant to stay in the theory, doctrinal world? And that's what I was saying before, that you kind of ignore certain things that you can handle and pick up the things that you can and just not deal with it. What is the expectation when somebody reads the Bible And then in one's life, how does that look? So just to give that as an intro. So the people that have music, where are they? Who ended up with the music? Okay, so people that understand music, you got that? For the people that didn't, you know what? Can I have one?
I'll take yours. Thank you.
So this is a section. It's not super complicated. If you look at it note for note, you can figure it out. But there's a lot going on here. It is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 simultaneous, in this case, instruments, part of a bigger piece that happens at once. And these seven are probably seven of, I would say, 20 different lines that will be happening. So the choral part has a complete other element. So there's a tremendous amount of stuff here that's happening at the same time. And this is page 2 of about 15. So there's a lot of stuff here. So what do we take from this? And this, my point is, this is a fragment. This is not complete. It's a little snippet. So to some, you look at this and it's like, I have no idea. I could do one of these things. I could maybe take the easiest one. And if I translate it into the solfege, I could do do, mi, re, re. So I could process it, kind of, and I could get something out of it. Or I could sit with my guitar or my piano and I can make my own music. I can't really do that. It's, when I try, it just stiffens up and it's just, I can't really do much with it. It's actually restricting my music. So I just want to play the song that I play reasonably well on the piano, and I do that, then I enjoy it, and I'm actually loosed, as opposed to trying to do this thing and being just stuck with it and having to do it this way and exactly this way and exactly that, and then, okay, I did that wrong, I gotta go back and do it again. This is very narrow on one hand. But to some that understand the music and understand what's going on, this is not restriction at all. This is pure beauty. Pure genius, astounding creativity, almost incomprehensible brain power that is happening here. And this fragment here, one of, I think it's 20-some lines that would happen, times 14 pages, to some this is magnificent. And to others it is legitimately F, quarter note, C, eighth note. It's really hard to process, and it doesn't do much for me. And you know what? I just don't want to put the time in. For what I'm getting out of it, I'll just leave it. I'll play my piece that I know how to play. So depending on how you look at this thing, it has very different meanings. So music in monochrome can be liberating, can be beautiful, or it can simply be tightening beyond what's comfortable and what's reasonable, and I don't want to deal with it. And even though two people are looking at the same thing, it's the exact same potential, but it's a very different viewpoint that look at it and respond the way they do. So somebody with a trumpet, somebody's learning to play the trumpet, let's do it this way, and he's figured out some tunes, he's figured out the scale, he likes his trumpet, he's getting the tone just right as far as he knows. And he walks up to a conductor and says, hey, I want to be part of your thing. I heard you're doing stuff. Look at me. Listen. And he plays his trumpet. He plays a few notes. Isn't that amazing? And the conductor, yeah, that's pretty good. And he says, can I join your thing? And the conductor says, maybe. Then he says, okay, can I play this? And he plays a few notes. And the conductor would be like, not really. It doesn't, no. But it's nice. Yes, it's nice. But we're not doing that here. Can I do this one? And he plays some more. And listen to this note, long and loud and beautiful. Listen to that one. And he just blasts it. Like, listen to that volume. And he goes on for maybe 10, 15 questions. And the conductor's like, yeah, it is what it is. Like, I give you credit for it. But from what I'm doing, it's just, it'd be better if you put a sock in it than just leave it there. For what I'm doing, for what you're doing, maybe, but you're asking me to be part of my thing, and then that thing doesn't fit this because it just isn't what we're doing. So as we do that, as he's asking the questions and being rebuffed, he's maybe feeling like this is unreasonable. It's restrictive. He's not letting me do anything that I want to do. It's just no, 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 no. I thought he likes music. Just note everything. So the concept of grace and truth, I just want to inject that here. With grace and truth, like this music is very, very specific and very exclusive. On one hand, if you look at it that way, the music is very exclusive and very specific and very narrow. But on the other hand, if you go inside it and do what it wants and what it's supposed to do, it is magnificent. It is both at the same time, completely uncontradictory. It is narrow, tight, specific, focused, restrictive, but magnificent at the same time. That concept is what I'm talking about entirely. That's the main point. And looking at grace and truth, it's the same way. It's the same concept. So grace, some people think it's just all the trumpets come together and blast everything they want and it's all okay because grace is here. No, it doesn't work like that. Grace means we're learning specific things. There's room to grow. There's room to learn. But we're learning towards a specific end. So there's a big difference to opening things up and everything's okay versus allowing people to simply learn and walk and practice towards a specific place that they should be in. That's grace and truth together from what I can tell. The outcome, learning is to be expected, number one. There's grace, but an outcome, the goal is very specific. So God's kingdom works like that. There's lots of grace and flex in life. In parenting, you can do many things wrong. And it can still come out okay. But if at a certain point you're simply doing things the wrong way and you're not guiding yourself into a specific way, the wheels fall off. So grace and truth. Grace has lots of learning, lots of flex. God built life that way. There's lots of learning to be had, but the end still is what it is. You have to narrow into a certain point. So grace and truth. I'd like to play a song here. I hope I don't offend anyone. I thought about this. I maybe should have asked. But my coworker used to say it's easier to get permission or pardon than permission. So I'll just play 1 minute of a track here. Just to, as we look at this, this is illustration. I'm not necessarily promoting or not promoting music here. Hang on a second. So, like I said before, there's probably 20 different things happening here. If it'll connect.
Sorry, I thought I had it on.
So the song, Worthy is the Lamb, for those that were at Handel's Messiah, Worthy is the Lamb. They sing, Worthy, worthy art thou, O Lord. It's a magnificent song. And then after that comes Amen. Amen, Amen. Worthy is the Lamb. Amen. It is a glorious thing. And I'd just like to play 1 minute of that. Bear with me here. And just listen to all that's happening in this song. As far as if we can hear detail, the 20 different parts. That kind of worked and kind of not, but there is so much in that. I have, for my recording thing, I have really high-end headphones, and if you listen that way, there is so much there. Here it's really hard to tell, a little speaker in a big building. But the 20 different layers, if you can hear them and hear how they work in this, the high soprano comes in, layered by the alto, the trumpet in the back, the strings, the cello, violin, organ, drummer, it's all in its perfect place. It is beautiful. And the more that you listen and the more that you amplify it, as in better sound, like my headphones, the better it is. It doesn't weaken when you sharp, when you zoom in, it becomes better. It is amazing what is in that, especially recording like that. It's the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. It is astounding what can come from black and white. Absolutely astounding. These people are reading monochrome, and they're coming up with that. So that, again, that concept is what I'm talking about. So as we do that, then the trumpeter walks up to this guy again. He'll play him the song and say, here's what we're doing. What the trumpeter's response should at that point be, instead of saying, can I blow this note or see how loud I can go, the trumpeter should change his attitude and say, can I join? What do I need to do? What can you tell me to tell me? What can you tell me that I can do that? The mindset is completely different, entirely different. So instead of the trumpeter walking up with his trumpet making his music, he basically puts it away in mindset and says, tell me what to do. Very, very different. And as you come at Christianity, there's a Christianity out there that is the trumpeter. They want a long note. They want to do what they want to do. But that very mindset kills the whole process. It isn't that. There is a conductor with a plan and a purpose, and he hears something. He sees it. He can make it happen with willing participants. And for those that do, for those that are willing to be narrowed in, it is absolutely astounding what can happen. But if the trumpeter is his own person, there's no way that can work. It's just not meant to. You can't bring 65 trumpeters in together and have them go. It doesn't work. The trumpeter has a specific spot right here and not there. And this tone and not that, and this volume and not that one. It's very specific. But bring it together with the wisdom of the conductor, then you have something. And just a quick thing from A.W. Tozer again. I love this book. I keep coming back to it. I'd like to talk about the wisdom of God here, just moving forward. It is vitally important that we hold the truth of God's infinite wisdom. It is vitally important that we hold the truth of God's infinite wisdom as a tenet of our creed. In other words, it's theology. We believe God is wise. We do. But it is not enough. We must, by exercise of faith, I believe God in theory and by theology, yes. And by prayer, we must bring it into the practical world of our day-to-day experience. If God's wisdom is not taken step for step and applied step for step, note for note, we're missing it. If we just stay here, we don't get music. This isn't what it's about. It's meant to be played. So we must take the infinite wisdom of God as a tenet of our creed. It's critical that we do that. We must understand the music, but it's not enough. We must, by exercise of faith and by prayer, bring it into the practical world of our day-to-day experience. So as I'm saying that, I will tie things together. It's maybe fragmented thoughts, but give me a bit. I'm bringing it together. So to read the music score is one thing. To play it is another. I think we all get that concept fairly easily. To read the music score is one thing, to play it is another. And when you try to play it, it becomes way harder. It's easy to listen to this and saying that is amazing. But when you try, you realize how hard that is. The one instrument is hard. Doing it with 20 others is a lot harder. Doing it really well is another level altogether. Like to play those notes, the trumpeter can figure it out. But to do it with the right tone, the right swell, the exact pause, it's hard, but beautiful. So to read the music score is one thing, to play it is another. And Christianity is like that. It's sometimes easy to disrespect certain things until you try it. Then you find out, oh, this is a lot more than I bargained for. Sometimes if you see a truly humble man, and you value it for what it is. There's people that we've come across some really, really good, deep men. And you can recognize it. This is value. But when God brings us something in our life that can humble us, it's like, I'm not sure I want this lesson. But that's the way to it. So a Christianity, going back to what I mentioned in the opening comments, a Christianity that in truth will say, thy kingdom come, thy will be done, is the only rational response to God. A Christianity that in truth will say that thy kingdom come, thy will be done is the only rational response to God. And speaking of rational, people do weird things. I said this before, but for example, some people believe, they say, I believe in Christianity, but not the miracles. I can't handle the miracles. And for me, with my rational mind, I think you believe in a Christianity, there's a God beyond what you can see. You can't go and feel him and understand him and look at his ways and decipher them and saying, I don't agree with that, that's not a good one. You can't do that because he's unseen. So they'll say a Christianity, yes, there's a God, but without miracles. Like the whale and Jonah, nah. The boat, the rain, no, that just makes no sense. But again, if you believe in a God that, then the Bible says he made the whole world, he made the ocean and the whale, he can tweak and alter the whale's DNA. He made that DNA. He can easily alter it, like just change a few things on it and not make the whale's tummy corrosive for that time. He made the thing. He's God. So to say a God without miracles is pure nonsense. Like, that's a, it's a dumb statement. And there's people do that. Or somebody would say, I believe in a God, but not an all-powerful one. Or I believe in a God, but not in his morals. I don't like how he operates. You as a human being are going to decide you don't like how God operates. Good move. Or we must be able to explain him. Somebody would want to say we must be able to explain God before we believe in him. Good luck with that. So just speaking of the rational part, a Christianity that in truth will say thy kingdom come, thy will be done is the only rational response to God. So how does this work out? And I do have an example or two. This is maybe a strange example, but let's do it anyways. Turn to Matthew 19. Matthew 19 for those that have Bibles. How does this theory work out? And going back to my title again, is there life in the law and monochrome music? Let's do an exercise here. So in Matthew 19, in your Bibles, read with me. It came to pass that when Jesus had finished these sayings, he departed from Galilee, came into the coast of Judea beyond Jordan, and great multitudes followed him, and he healed them there. The Pharisees also came unto him, tempting him and saying unto him, so they're simply wanting to trip him up. Is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause? And I'll just pause there before I go in. I'll use a different illustration to prime our thinking. So a dad buys a $40,000 John Deere tractor. It's got a cab. It's got a loader. It's brand new. It's nice. And his 10-year-old comes up and says, Dad, can I back it into a tree? Dad is like, no, that's not what we do. Can I roll it? No. Can I back over sharp rocks to see what happens to the tires? No. And he keeps asking things, and after a while the son says, ah, but there's insurance. So all that you've been saying, what do you say to that? There's insurance. And the dad at this point is simply thinking, you have no idea what you're talking about. This thing is made for the job that we bought it for. That's the purpose of it. And all of your questions show me that you have no idea. You're missing the very, very obvious. The machine is not made for backing into trees and going over sharp rocks. It's just, you're missing the entire point of the thing. And your questions prove it. And when you say there's insurance, that's your ticket to prove what you're saying, but it proves again that you don't know what you're talking about. So in Matthew 20, with that in mind, look at this here. Let's read it. This is the theology part. This is the music part. But how does it work out? So let's do that. And he answered and said unto them, so they asked him, can a man put away his wife for any reason, is what they're asking. It says every cause, but it says any cause. Is it lawful for a man to dismiss his wife and send her out? Can they be ripped apart, basically? And Jesus answered and said unto them, have you not read? So his very have you not read is it's a pushback. That very sentence is a pushback. Have you not read, as in no. Have you not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female? So there's 11 instances here where Jesus layers and reinforces his point. And think of it in the way of, no, we don't go over sharp rocks. No, we don't bump into trees. No, we don't roll it down the hill. Think of it in that light. So Jesus is answering their question with this. And he says in verse 4, there's the first one. No, we don't do that. And said, for this cause shall a man leave father and mother, shall cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. That's the second one. Wherefore, they're no more twain, but one flesh. They're together. He layers again. Wherefore, another one, wherefore would God have joined together, let none put it, man put asunder. Number 4. And the fifth one comes in, they said unto him, so they understood what he was saying. They're saying, if you say they cannot be separated, why did then Moses give a command to writing of divorcement and to put her away? So the son is now asking, but there's insurance. We can roll it down the hill. There's insurance for it. So they said, why did Moses give a command to give a writing of divorcement and to put her away? So they agree with what Jesus said. Number a fifth reinforcement here. And he said unto Moses, Moses, because of the hardness of your heart, suffered you to put away your wives. So you were so stiff-necked that Moses had to put a clause in to deal with you. But from the beginning, and this is the seventh one, but from the beginning it was not so. He says it again, seventh time that it's reinforced. It's not supposed to happen. And I say unto whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery, and whosoever marrieth her, which is put away, doth commit adultery. That's the eighth one. And his disciples, now his disciples are getting in on it. They were overhearing it, and they're joining the conversation, and said, if the case of a man be so with his wife, like if it simply cannot be undone, they say here, the ninth point is, it's good for them not to marry. Like, goodness, if it's that stiff, like if eight times over we say, no, 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 the disciples are at this point interrupting, saying, well, if it's that tight, a man shouldn't get married because there is no out. And Jesus agrees with them, but he said unto them, all men cannot receive this saying. So he's saying, and Jesus goes on the 11th one, that there's eunuchs that are born from their mother's womb, they were meant not to marry. So that he's saying that commandment can't be received by everyone. It's not for everyone not to marry just because it's so tight. Okay, so that's the music script. Let's say it that way. Here's the law. Is there life in the law? So that feels no, 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 like I said before. But really, what is Jesus saying here? And we'll do an exercise in your mind. Please follow me. It'll work better if you actually do it. Think of a marriage that you know is healthy, that works. Like think of two people with actual names. Maybe you, whoever. Just think of a good marriage, a healthy marriage. It might not be perfect, but it's healthy. It's working like it should. Children, all that's with it. Household, the provision, the house, the relationship. It's just healthy and going like it should. Think of two people, actual people. And that's what Jesus is looking like, looking for. This is what it's supposed to be. You've got a marriage of two people that are joined. They are together. You have all these positive, beautiful things in it. So there's harmony happening. There's trust, deep trust. The longer things go, the deeper the trust is. There's like. These two people just like each other. There's understanding. They get what it means. They get what the eye waggle means. They get what that tightening of the mouth means. They get the body language when he tenses up. Or when she's just happy. He knows what that means. There's knowing. There's just enjoyment with these two people. There's endearment. There's commitment. He is not leaving her. He's not disappearing tomorrow. They're in for the long haul. There's endurance. There's longing. There's intimacy. There's security. There's safety. There's love. That's what God built. That's what God had in mind. That's marriage. So when Jesus says, no, 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 they shouldn't be ripped apart. No, they shouldn't. Think of your two people, that healthy marriage, and let's read this again because that's Jesus' viewpoint. So they would be asking, should, in your mind, should person A and B be pulled apart, ripped apart? Can we undo that at any point? So Jesus is answering with the law here, if you can put it in a law sense. From that beautiful union that's producing so much, that's giving so much to society, to the couple, to the children, to the home, to the church, that union is what we're talking about. It's not a legal document. It's music. So when Jesus is talking about no, 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 no to the trumpeter, you can't blow this, you can't blow that, you can't do this, he knows what he's talking about because he's seeing something. So look, thinking of your two people that you had in mind, let's do it. Let's quickly go through here. Is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for any reason? And with the two people you have in mind, how would you answer that? No, right? We don't want these two people ripped apart. Let's leave them together because that's how it's working really, really well. It's a great design. And he answered and said, have you not read which he made them and made them at the beginning, male and female? They're made separately and opposite to come together and complement. That's the design, people. Let's not rip it. And then he said, for this cause shall man leave father and mother. It's a sacred, blessed place to be with father and mother. And he shall cleave to his wife. That's the point. And they twain shall be one flesh. They'll be joined together. Wherefore, there are no more twain, but one flesh. He's still describing the couple that you have in your mind. He's describing them. Wherefore, what God has joined together, let no man put asunder. Because we're looking for harmony, trust, like, understanding, knowing, enjoyment, endearment, commitment, endurance, longing, intimacy, security, safety, love, and on is what we're looking for. And they're asking, can we roll the tractor? Can we back over rocks? Can we dent the hood? Can we break the window? And Jesus is saying, lawishly, no. No, 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 no. And he's saying to the trumpeter, no, 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 no. But there's a specific in mind. So the point I'm making here is, when we choose God's viewpoint, and we choose to be, I don't even want to say it because it comes with such negative backwash, but I will anyways. If we choose to be lawish about God's things, especially Christ's commandments, the outside view can be, it can look not nice. But if you're looking at it for what it is, if you hear the music and then you come under that restriction, quotation marks, the restriction isn't a restriction. Give me more. Teach me how to do this. How do you make that note to a seasoned trumpeter? How does this work? Give me more. I want what this is. It's a very, very different mindset. And depending, like, our human nature tends to push back. We were born sinners. I rebelled for many, many of my years before I understood God in this way. When my heart at a certain point said, God, I want more of what you have. I understand what you're doing. I love your ways. There came a point when my heart said that. I wasn't always there. It was for a long time, it was restrictive. I'm not allowed to do this. I'm not allowed to do that, or this, or this, or this. The fun things, they're off. The have to things, I have to. I want to be a good person. That is not Christianity. We're missing it if that's your mindset. And I'm not faulting. It's a process to get there. It's a thinking, applying, wisdom process. And after a certain while, you understand what's happening. And you start to say, God, I think I'm understanding what you're doing. Can I have more? Teach me more. I have prayed many times, father me more aggressively. God, father me more aggressively. I'm doing too many things wrong with me. I am my problem. Father me. Spank me where needed. Deal with me. Teach me. Shape me more aggressively as a father. Take your hand more firmly on me and make me into what you would like me to be, because I trust you more than I trust me. Father me more aggressively. And once that happens, you begin to hear and play music, and you understand my part comes together with this one, and that thing starts happening. That is Christianity. So when Jesus narrows in, he's not just a no person, he's life, and he knows what he's looking for. But when viewed from a law point of view of don't, that is true, but it's not the point. The point is what's beyond it to the life beyond it. There are certain things that fit and certain things that don't fit. So just as a quick check, can I have water, please? So just as a quick check, just the human condition. If we would say, we've had a lot of spilled tea in church, and people put honey in it. Thank you. We've had a lot of spilled tea in church. People put honey in it, and it spills. It goes under the seat, and the people that clean up have to spend like half hour to clean up the spilled tea with the honey. We've said it, I think, 10 Sundays in a row, there's still honey and tea being spilled on the floor. Could we say that without a lot of this, and we'd like it to go away, so whoever brings tea and it spills, we would like you to clean the church for the next 4 months. Could we do that? So somebody might think, one response is, a natural response could be, I am not bringing tea. I don't want to do church cleaning for the next 4 months. And somebody would say, 4 months? That is an unreasonable amount of time for bringing tea one time. So the human response typically will tend to be, 4 months? That's an unreasonable amount of time for bringing tea. But the point is, we're not intent on making me or you or anybody clean church for 4 months. The point is, we don't want the sticky floor. We just want a clean floor. That's all we're after. And if we need to apply this to get that, if we have a clean floor, everybody's happy. It's not that we cheer the whole place up because somebody cleans the church for 4 months. That's not the point. But this kind of needs to be in place to get that. That's kind of how the law works. But our human tendency, I do that at school sometimes as a test. I'll tell them. No, I'll leave that for later. So again, the point is the clean church and avoiding mess, not that the law wants to be applied. It's simply a method of getting there. So what is your attitude? Is there life in the law? So thinking of the marriage thing, and I'd just like to move forward a bit here. So there's things that are heritage, and sometimes Anabaptists can have a negative thing as well. It's become a bit lawish to some people. But I would just like to say that the Anabaptist view is actually a surprisingly consistent, surprisingly rational, and surprisingly well-functioning theology system. Surprisingly. Because if you look at other people and inconsistencies, if you look at, for example, when I say we as Anabaptists, we're one of the few people that take Matthew 19 and apply it and saying, we're not going to discard our wives when we get tired of them and get a new one. That option is not there for us. Now, we believe that, but on the other hand, we believe to be Christ-like and to build a good marriage. And those two things are not in conflict. They work together perfectly well. We don't have an out. We're not looking for a better one because it's not an option. We recognize when we marry once, we're going to do it really, 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 really carefully because it's meant with one person to attach one time deeply and stay there till we die. That's our theology. And it works out to wonderful people, functioning well, marriages that work largely, as opposed to being at a 50% divorce rate. Like imagine if we just said the people over here are married and the people over here have been divorced 3 times. That would be a normal church setting. And those are statistics, but on the other hand, what if you actually took that? And I don't want to be crude, but if we just say that, yeah, I don't want to go into any more than that. I don't want to imagine those things, but if some of our people had been divorced a number of times, it's catastrophic. The tractor rolled down the hill and burned. It cannot be. Society cannot function like that. So when the Anabaptists saying that we believe in no divorce and remarriage, it can be law. But if you take it to what it is, good marriages that work, there's life there. So the Anabaptists that take this tenet of Jesus and saying, we agree with him, we understand that he knows what he's talking about, we're going to go with what he says, not with what the church says at large, or what the heathen say, or the psychologists say, or the counselors say. If there's any stress, discard, disconnect. Disconnect from your spouse, disconnect from your parents. That's common philosophy out there. But no, we take Christ's words, the narrow words, and apply them and find life and find wonderful music therein. And the just one more in closing here. There's the, as we go through them as a series with at school, Brubaker does a wonderful job of bringing that out. But just the other one, the being peaceful, non-fighting people, maybe non-resistance is a different word, or suffering love. Just think of it this way. There's two people living peacefully together, Or maybe I'll back up a little bit. Where should I go? So one more example. So God's world is the planet. God has no borders. God's world is simply the planet. It's God's world. All of God's children are God's children. He doesn't care about color, where you live. If you're 10 feet on this side of the U.S. border and 10 feet on this side being Mexico, it's God's world. He just made it in one coherent ball. So borders are a man-made thing, and they've moved a lot. It'd be interesting if you could look at the planet to see it all green. Everything's one country, so to speak. And then the first division, this is my land, this is your land. And then we'd go green and yellow. And then somebody adds another, we'd go green, yellow, blue. And then somebody adds another section, I'm taking this, I'm taking the whole continent. Okay, we do that purple. And as people start dividing up, the colors start coming up. And then all of a sudden, the blue changes to green because they took it over. And just to see that happening for 6,000 years of just that display of what man has done, cut, chop, give, fight, kill, 10,000 people here, like even the Old Testament, it was awful what they did for land with borders, to fight over borders. But in God's world, it's still the same planet. It's all green. So when man did that, they divided it up. And with that becomes, you have to fight for yours. You have to fight for the green. You have to protect the green. You have to be hostile to yellow, or else the system doesn't work. But to God, it's just his world, his operating principles. He's God. Will God steal? No. Will he cheat? No. Will he club his neighbor? No. Will he hoard goods? No. Will he betray? No. Will God slander? No. Will he be dishonest in trading? No. And so on. God's world is just God's world. He's honest. He'll give. He's benevolent. He doesn't fight. He'll give what you need. Like if he was your neighbor, right? That's how God's world operates. So man made this one. Man made contracts, fine print, suspicion, police, nuclear, safety, locks, antivirus systems, phone software vulnerability fixes. That's man stuff. So man put this layer on top of God's green, all one country, one people. And then man chopped it up. And then man decided it's good to fight and protect and keep this thing intact. We need to keep yellow, yellow. And because we're Christians, it's our duty to keep yellow, yellow, because we got to keep the yellow people safe against the red people. So the yellow people are obligated to kill the red because the red are coming and taking the yellow. But from God's viewpoint, you still have all green. And some people miss that concept. To God, it didn't change ever. It's still all his world. And these borders might shift again. And then it'll be right to take green from red. And tomorrow it might be the other way that we do. Now these people that were awful are now our friends, but yesterday they weren't. So we kill them today and tomorrow it's wrong because they're our friends. We can't kill them. And the whole thing just becomes so weird. But God is not like that. God stays the same. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, means something. So when the Anabaptists say that we will not kill, we will not maim, we will not hurt mankind, we will take Christ's example, especially the one in the garden and his teachings, and we're going to recognize it's God's world. We're going to agree with God. This is how you operate. This is how I'm going to operate. You ask me to, I will. Is it going to be popular? Will everyone agree? No. Can I explain it in 5 minutes in a tract? Of course not. It's a big concept. So when people don't get you, maybe you as young people, if they don't understand, if you can't give it in a soundbite, it's okay. It's for thinking people. It's for rational conversation that you give it to people in conversation, maybe over a year. This isn't a soundbite thing that we say, I'm this, and then it's explainable. So the fact that we can't just give it to people in a trite way, it isn't trite. It's God's world. We need to explain it. It's made how God is, how God thinks, how God operates, and that's why I believe it. To just say I'm non-resistant and then expect people to absorb that is not, that's not reasonable. So the tenets that we believe are complicated in a way, but they're simple in another, but they're not soundbite information. And just as a quick note, I rented twice now, I've rented two coaches. I don't know what those buses are worth, but they're worth a lot of money. And I texted this guy, can I rent the coach? Can we borrow it for this and this date? And he said, sure, come on down. Here's the address. He sent me the address. I drove there. We shook hands. And then we did a walk around, and he showed me what was what and the weaknesses of it. And he shook hands and wished me well, and I drove off. That's literally all that happened. He does not know my last name. He has no clue where I live. He did not see a driver's license. We didn't sign anything. I know his last name because of his text. I took a motor coach. It's a, I don't know, it's probably worth $50,000, $60,000. And it went on a handshake. And it got returned in better condition than I took it. Because that's God's world. It actually works. So when people say it's this theology, well, we don't do divorce. That theology, how does that work? How does that work out? It works out pretty well. I love my marriage. So it becomes from theology, it goes to actual music. When God's world is implemented, when these tenets of faith, this thing gets lived, it becomes something very different than monochrome music. It becomes beauty. And that's God's world. That's God's law. So is there life in the law? So going back to the bus illustration, it happened with the previous one too when we went to Ontario. The guy still, they don't know me at all. They have no information about me. I could have taken the bus and disappeared and sold it. But in God's world, there's trust. There was no question of is it coming back because I'm a Christian, he's a Christian. That's the criteria. God's child, doing their transaction. Try renting a car. There's paperwork yay long. From people not in God's world. But in God's world, it works really, really well. Society would be wonderful if we could get there. So when Jesus said in the garden, when Peter, with aggression, defended Jesus and he chopped the ear off in Matthew, I think it was 26. So Peter chopped the ear off in zeal. And Jesus took it, put it back on, healed it in all that chaos, and said, Peter, basically don't do that. If you live by the sword, you die by the sword. This is not how we are. And then he said to Pilate, my kingdom is not in this world, or else my servants would fight. This isn't how we do it. So again, that can be viewed as restrictive. And again, it's hard to explain that to the public in general. But it doesn't change God's way, God's viewpoint. It's okay to be weird in other people's eyes, as long as we're aligned with God. So is there life in the law? Can music be black and white? And the answer would be yes, if you can see beyond the page and text to what it's meant to reveal and portray. It's God's world and God's children in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation. It can get complicated. But the same tenets have applied in 2025 and 2001, in 1931, in 1611, in AD 2, in BC 6, and BC 4029. It's been the same world. It's been the same God. And should this world stand for another 1,000 years, or 100, or 5, it'll still be that way. It'll still be current. It'll still be relevant. God's world and God's children. We have the honor of being invited in. And I'd like to go to, just in closing here, Psalm 119. For those of you who know the psalm, you'll know why I'm going there. It's almost, Psalm 119, if you have a Bible, it has 176 verses, and all of them, to one degree or another, say that they like God's law. They like his tenets, they like his precepts, they like his testimonies, they like his ways. So David is simply going on and on and on for 147 verses. He's saying, I love your law. 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 147 times. Like at point number 3, 4, 5, we get the point. He keeps going and going and going and going. What did David tap into? God's ways are good. They work. So he says, blessed are the undefiled in the way who walk in the wall. And blessed are the undefiled. So when you walk in God's ways, you are undefiled. They walk in the law of the Lord. Blessed are they that keep his testimonies and that seek him with a whole heart. They also do no iniquity that walk in his ways. So he just layers and layers and layers. What did David find? What did this man discover that it poured out? And many of his proverbs are like that, or his psalms. And just in closing, I'd like to read two things from John. So when that heart change changes to understanding what God is doing and how God is, and you start going from restriction, no, you may not play the trumpet this way. No, you may not play the trumpet this way. I need it done this way. Once we start understanding that, John says in the book of John, it says, hereby we know, and this is layered, so it takes absorbing. Hereby we know that we know him. So how do you know that you know God? How do you understand that you understand God? And the question, the answer will be if we keep his commandments. If the conductor tells you to do this and you're able to do it and you get the music from it, and then when he says stop, you stop, and he directs the cellos over here. And once you start following the conductor, you understand what he's doing and you want more of it and you like it and you respect him. And your respect for him and what he's able to do just rises. So how do we know that we know him? If we keep his commandments. And again, just the simple following of the black and white isn't what I'm talking about. I hope I've made that point. Just simply to do law is not at all what I'm saying. I'm just saying to follow God's ways and enjoy who he is and how he is and have that world unlock and unfold is a marvelous, marvelous process. It's something that every young person, I would deeply wish that for you. If you haven't, that you can understand that. There's life in God's world. And the closer you get to it, the better it is. And some of the tenets that we teach as doctrines, it's not that we just say no to all of this. We're saying yes to life, to God's actual words, to his actual example. And then the other one in John, in 1 John, by this we know, this is a very common verse. It's come up many times, but it just so fits. For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments. So we do keep his commandments. We are law people, and his commandments are not grievous. Can I keep all of Matthew, 19? Can I keep that whole section with my wife? Would you let me do that, God? Would you let me be together, to be close, to be harmonious, to have a wonderful marriage? I want more of that. So do I want more of the no, no, no? Yes, I want more of do not be separated for this reason, for that reason, for that. I want more of that. I want life. I want to be together forever, or at least in this life, marriage-wise. And do I want a peaceful society where people don't kill each other, where it's not okay to kill each other just because the border gets drawn up or so on and so forth? Do I want to be a person that will be that way? This person will never hurt you. I want to be in that world. It's not going to be that politics might activate one day and he might become your enemy. God's world isn't like that. God's world says this person will never hurt you because he's a Christian. Because if we're here today and I would move to a country that we're hostile with as Canadians and we would believe the tenets of war, you would have to fight me. Nothing changed. I'm still me. You're still you. But in God's world, we're brothers. Brothers don't fight. And that's the point. So it's a restrictive doctrine, but it's God's way, and that's what we're going for. So just what I opened with, is there life in the law? And then young people, what could I and what should I commit to as far as Christianity goes? What Christianity do you want? What will I walk in? What is a current, viable, sensible in the long term and short term? What's a good, feels wrong to say it, but what's a good Christianity to buy into? It's a relevant question. Does what we believe and how we choose to live make sense in the big picture? What about all the others that aren't there, that don't do what we do? Jesus said to Peter when he asked about John, basically paraphrase, let him be and you follow me. And I remember as a young person, I made that choice. I had lots of friends that were evangelical. Today, unfortunately, I just heard one of my good friends I used to work with, he married a man. Another one, same thing. Those were my evangelical friends. They were worship leaders, both of them. It didn't go well, and I chose the narrow way, and I'm so deeply grateful to God that I did. and they chose the freedom way, and it just did not work out. So as we make those choices, we want to recognize there's many people that believe differently, and God will sort that out. I'm not speaking to them. I'm speaking for you as young people, for us as older ones. Legitimately take God's word as deep as we can and follow it carefully. Amen.